But the more I suppressed these things, the worse I felt. I developed chronic physical complaints and doctors regularly sent me home with the words, "We can't find anything, you're perfectly healthy," even though I was doubled over in pain. There were symptoms such as cardiac arrhythmia, stomach cramps and severe back pain. And in between, as already mentioned, there was always a funeral. Today I know that my body served as an organ of expression at the time. It showed symptoms that I had partly adopted from other people, and brought to light perceptions on a physical level that I had not given any better opportunity to express. For a while I even developed a strange fear of dying. I had to suppress my previous image of life, death and the afterlife so as not to be reminded of my expanded sensory perception. This created a gap that I filled with the widespread image that everything is over after death. And that is exactly what triggered this incredible fear in me. An inner battle raged within me and resistance reared up within me against the idea of nothingness. The idea that everything around me would be black after life seemed so infinitely senseless to me. I could not and did not want to imagine that this wonderful creation could work like that. It was simply against the laws of nature, which can be observed year after year, for example in the changing seasons. I asked myself how it could be possible that we humans should be subject to completely different laws. Nature awakens anew from every hibernation to continue growing. Why should it be any different for us humans? No matter what, I tried to accept this image of final death, ultimately to be more convenient for others, I just couldn't succeed. Everything that humans do would lose its meaning and purpose, and I simply couldn't imagine that God would go to such lengths to achieve this. So I had to develop the courage to face my own truth, because all these questions would not remain unanswered. They didn't get quieter, but louder, the more I tried to push them aside. I am now very happy that my spiritual helpers were so persistent, because their perseverance has brought me where I am today. I can do what gives me joy and what deeply fulfills me. In the meantime, I had the proverbial block in front of my head that prevented me from recognizing my true interests and needs. Since the power of compassion had become very strong within me, it inevitably had to find its way into my consciousness, since I did not allow it to voluntarily. I realized that I should no longer suppress my view of things, because the last few years had shown how unhealthy that was for me. As you can see, life catapulted me onto the right track and fortunately just did not let go. When I finally realized these connections, I began to perceive myself and my environment differently. I used my difference and tried to integrate it into my everyday life. I was no longer frightened by myself, but tried to accept myself as I was. That was an important step in the right direction, but I was still a long way from my current work as a medium. That was not what I was after. I would never have dreamed of this idea. I put my energy into my artistic development and tried my hand at performing and visual arts. Inspired, I painted without knowing what inspiration actually was. I followed my intuitions without knowing that they were intuitions. For me, they were simply thoughts. But the decisive factor was that I began to accept myself. I no longer asked myself how I knew this or that. I simply accepted it and I began to feel better again. My chronic complaints, which had manifested themselves in the meantime, gradually disappeared. Then came the next turning point in my life. I met my first husband. He was, tellingly, an undertaker and worked in his parents' family business. They, in turn, were the landlords of the goldsmith's shop that I had rented. It didn't bother me in the slightest that the undertaker's business was in the courtyard of my goldsmith's studio. That's why I didn't mind that my new love was an undertaker by profession. I had no negative or strange feelings about it. On the contrary, I got on very well with his parents as landlords. When we became a couple, I encountered new facets of death. And through this marriage I found my calling as a medium. There are an incredible number of key moments that I was able to experience with my first husband. Our time together was extremely intense and it put us both on our predetermined path, which still binds us deeply today. I believe we agreed to meet in heaven before we were born. I am now quite sure of that. One of these important key moments was a trip to the cinema. We actually went to the cinema to see the advertisement for my Goldsmith's studio. That also meant that we could watch the following film for free. However, we had no idea which film would be playing. So after the advertising part, we stayed seated and were surprised by what would be shown. What came next was a film about four young girls who all had a special talent. One could summon the elements of nature, the other could see the future, etc. The film depicted the girls in a struggle over whether they should use their abilities to serve or abuse others. Later, as we drove home in the car, the film was still having an effect on us and we didn't talk much. Until my husband suddenly asked me, "Are you as interested in this topic as I am?" I was astonished because it was the first time someone had asked me something like that. For the first time in a long time, I was able to talk about my innermost thoughts and feelings without fear. We started to talk about it more and more often, and these conversations were a huge relief for both of us. I found out that he also saw things differently than most people, and so our development took its course. We soon decided to move in together and to celebrate our future together. We found a house that we both felt magically attracted to, and we moved in there a few weeks later. It was extremely remote in a beautiful spot, and we had no idea how many groundbreaking experiences were waiting for us there. Not even 2 days had passed after we moved in when a girl with a pony stood on our terrace. We greeted her and asked who she was. She introduced herself as the neighbor's daughter and told us as if it was the most natural thing in the world that her mother was a witch and that she lived in the house next door with her parents and two siblings. Strangely enough, we didn't doubt it either, because she spoke about it so naturally that it seemed completely normal to us that our new neighbor should be a witch. Of course, it didn't take long before we met the girl's mother, and it quickly became clear what the daughter meant by witch. Her mother worked as a healer and knew a lot about medicinal herbs. A nice, young and natural woman with whom we quickly came into contact. A close friendship developed between us and this family, which had a great influence on and helped to shape my spiritual development. I admire the mother's knowledge of nature, and soon I had found someone to talk to who thought my perceptions were completely normal. Eventually I got to know some of her friends and learned that I wasn't as alone with my way of perceiving as I had thought until then. To this day I am grateful to God that I met this woman, because through her I remembered everything I once knew and learned what I was missing. She encouraged me in my interest, and apart from that we had a lot of fun. From then on my mediumistic development was unstoppable. Among other things, I was able to consciously feel and hear my spiritual helper again, just as I had done as a child. But of course, despite his support, I also made mistakes and sometimes had to learn, painfully, how to use knowledge and how not to. Sometimes I overshot my goal in my enthusiasm for newly acquired knowledge. I call it the phase of esoteric arrogance, when you think you've eaten wisdom with a spoon. I always had good advice, regardless of whether I had been asked for it beforehand or not. Fortunately, my spiritual helpers, there are several, quickly brought me back down to earth and thus prevented me from causing greater damage. They showed me that there are limits that must be respected. I urgently needed this realization, because it was never my intention to overwhelm others or to disregard their limits. This is how I also learned what healthy limits are and what they are for. I am very, very grateful for these experiences because they gave me a solid foundation for really meeting people and serving them with humility. Because when I realized that I was sometimes lacking healthy boundaries, I also realized why they are important. They are the vessel for all feelings, for respect and consideration. Without the ability to set boundaries, you cannot clearly define yourself and your relationships with other people, and you lose your own identity. And if, like me, you also have to deal with disembodied beings such as the deceased, healthy boundaries are really useful and important, because without them, true contact and connection are not possible. Another day that was to be very impressive and groundbreaking for me was the day when I attended a seminar on clairvoyance for the first time. My husband had encouraged me to go. It was my first spiritual seminar ever, so I came there completely unbiased and quite naive. I was just curious about what you could learn there and had no idea what to expect that day. We began with preparatory concentration exercises and then moved on to partner exercises. It was as if a switch had been flipped inside me, suddenly everything was back. With absolute clarity, I saw and sensed intimate things and facts that I could not possibly have known all about these strangers. I could read the course participants like open books and was given very specific, helpful tips for each one, which I then also expressed. The course leader was phenomenal. He did not push me away, but instead gave me the opportunity to get my messages across so that the other participants could receive them. His behavior is not at all natural for me, because there is a lot of competition and egoism in the esoteric field in particular. He must have sensed that I was not trying to put myself in the spotlight or to take the lead of his seminar away from him. To this day I don't know how he actually felt about it, but it can't have been negative for him, because we still see each other now and again and these encounters are always very warm. On the evening of the seminar day, we finally talked for a while. During this conversation, he told me that he couldn't teach me much more. I should turn to English mediums in the future, because there would probably be more for me to learn there. I was pretty stunned by this, because I had expected anything but that. It seemed as if our meeting was not an everyday encounter for him either. Despite these experiences, I was still not really aware of the dimension of my perceptions and the nature of my gift even after this seminar. That only came with time, step by step. Of course, my curiosity was now aroused and I wanted to find out more about what exactly I was perceiving and, above all, where it came from. Emotionally, I could classify most of it, but I was looking for explanations for my mind. I wanted to understand what was happening to me, why, how and what for. There were a lot of questions that were crying out for answers. There were explanations in books, but usually something didn't quite fit with my feelings. There was always a problem somewhere if I questioned what I was reading persistently enough. I wanted to find explanations that didn't reach any limits, that could be linked together so that new levels and new options for action could be opened up. Today I know how high the demands were, but I had these ideas as a child, so what could I do against this urge to explore? After attending the clairvoyance seminar, things happened very quickly. Many key moments in my spiritual development took place during this time. The seminar had triggered more in me than I had initially realized. A few weeks later, I was sitting in my bed. I was listening to quiet music and wanted to relax a little. Suddenly a film ran through my mind's eye and I could no longer feel my body. My spiritual helper took me by the hand in this inner film and told me that he urgently needed to show me something. Since I felt the deepest trust in him, I did not resist. We moved further and further away from the globe with our light bodies. My physical body remained in bed. I felt like an astronaut. At some point my helper stopped and I turned around and took a look at the Earth. At that moment I saw this beautiful, blue planet below me, like you see in satellite images. I was deeply touched and impressed by the glow that emanated from it. I felt a little uneasy, so I asked him what we were actually here for. He pointed to the globe and pointed out some bright lights to me. Some were larger, some smaller. He explained to me that these were the souls of the people I had already ignited. I was very surprised, as I hadn't really been aware of it. I thought there were quite a lot of them. He grinned and said, "I'll show you what a lot is." And suddenly countless lights shone beneath us. He explained to me that I was only at the beginning of my work and how many souls would shine at the end depended on me. I asked what I had to do to make them shine and he said, "Just be yourself. Do your work with our help and have fun doing it. Show people your respect and love. No more and no less is needed. It is and remains your decision whether you want to do that, but this is how your view of the world could look when you die. I replied that I had to digest that first, and although it was quite pleasant up here, I would now like to go back to my body and to Earth. Of course, he said. I just wanted to show you this view. I slowly came back into my body and realized that I had just had an out-of-body experience. I felt my body again and was so deeply touched that I sat in my bed for quite a while, silent and thoughtful. I thought a lot about this trip in the months that followed and took my time to make my decision. After all, I was not only flattered by these prospects, but I was also sure that I would be able to take the trip with me. Above all, I was aware of the great responsibility that would be associated with it. Especially since I wasn't quite sure how switching on the lights would work in practice. My personality probably had to mature a bit for that, but it did so inexorably. It was as if someone had switched on the turbo. When I was once again on my way to the Eiffel with my husband and a friend to visit my mother, something very dramatic happened to me. We were driving through the countryside and from a distance I saw a deer standing on the side of the road. It was clearly visible and I assumed that my husband, who was driving, saw it too. The closer we got, the more I suspected that he hadn't seen it yet because he hadn't slowed down. I was paralyzed and couldn't bring myself to tell him to watch out. I became more and more aware with every meter that he didn't notice, and I stared at the deer and the deer stared at the car. At the moment when we were only 2 meters away from the animal, it jumped out onto the road in front of our car instead of disappearing into the forest in fright. There was a terrible bang and then the car came to a stop. I jumped out of the vehicle and saw the animal lying in front of our car. As if remotely controlled, I grabbed it by the legs, pulled it off the road and laid it on the grass at the side of the road. I suddenly remembered what my neighbor and friend had recently explained to me about first aid for animals. That's exactly what I did. I put one hand on the animal's head and one on its rump. Since the animal was still alive, I hoped I could do something useful. Strangely, the animal only tried to get up for a very short time, but then lay back on its side and relaxed. Since I didn't have any emergency drops, rescue, with me, I just imagined that I would give them to the deer to calm it down, which it did. Then energy somehow flowed through my hands and I remembered what my friend had said, either the animal gets the strength to get back on its feet quickly, or it is too badly injured. Then you use this flow of energy to help the animal die more quickly and painlessly. But the animal still makes the decision, and you only give it the strength to make that decision. After a few seconds, the animal suddenly overextended, its spine made a cracking noise, and it died. My husband drove off to fetch the forest ranger, and I sat with the deer until he came back. I noticed that the insides of my hands were burning like fire, even though my hands were physically cold. The feeling did not go away even a few weeks after the accident. When I then went to see another friend to learn about healing, I got the explanation for my burning hands. She said in her typical, direct and unmistakable way, "How convenient. This experience has opened up energy channels for you. Something that others have to attend expensive seminars for. Be happy about this gift from God." Fortunately, she then explained to me how I could control this constant flow of energy. Without her, I would not have known what a gift God had given me that day. On the one hand, I am still dismayed by this event, but on the other hand, the deer did not die in vain. Since then, I have used this power as best I can to help others, which is why I was finally able to accept the death of this animal and forgive myself for my speechlessness. A lot of things began to change. Everything around me and within me was in a phase of change, including my friendship with my neighbor, the witch. The trigger for this was probably a specific situation that our friendship was not up to. As so often, I sat at my painting table and looked out into the valley that opened up in front of my window. It was a really beautiful piece of nature where we lived. Suddenly and without warning, a whole film played before my inner eye, taking place at the edge of the forest on the other side of our valley. I saw a naked child's corpse lying there in my mind's eye, saw a man next to it, heard his name and saw a date. It was summer and there were still 4 weeks to go until the date. When I looked more closely, I recognized the girl as our neighbor's youngest daughter. I had never had such a vision before, but I knew intuitively that it was one. Now I was faced with the great dilemma of what to do with these images, because I had no experience with them that I could draw on. Would it be right to go to my friend and tell her? Or should I keep it to myself? And not take it so seriously? I spoke to my husband about it and he encouraged me to tell my friend. He thought that she would understand it and would be able to deal with it. First, however, I spoke to another friend who also knew this friend and her family well. She was an astrologer and after I confided in her, she told me that she had also noticed this theme in her daughter's horoscope. She also thought that I absolutely had to tell my friend. Of course, I would never have been able to forgive myself if something terrible had actually happened and I hadn't said anything beforehand. I really found it very difficult and it took a lot of courage to finally tell the girl's mother about my vision, including the date and the name of the man. At first, she reacted very understandingly and calmly. I tried to explain to her how torn I was because I didn't want to overstep any boundaries with her either. So I told her everything I had seen in my mind's eye on that film, and I felt somewhat relieved afterward. I left it up to her to decide what to do with that information. The date was getting closer and closer, and it was etched in my mind. I would only be truly relieved when that day was over. In the meantime, my neighbor had told her husband about our conversation, and he just said that negative thinking can also attract things. There is certainly some truth in that, but such a tragedy is the last thing I would wish on anyone. It made me quite sad to be misunderstood like that. On the other hand, this was a really tough situation for everyone, so I had some understanding for her reaction. In the next few days, I learned that a friend of this family had caught a man on the other side of the valley secretly taking photos of their house. This friend confronted the man and took the film from him. I don't know, however, what the photographer's real motives were. The date from my vision had finally arrived. It was a Saturday and extremely hot. My friend's three children were playing in an inflatable paddling pool down by the stables near the road. My friend was up in the house on the slope. As I passed the children, I told the eldest daughter that I would be home if anything happened. I didn't say anything else, of course. Towards the afternoon, an old acquaintance of the family who hadn't visited for years showed up unannounced. The day developed in such a way that we all ended up sitting on our terrace and having a spontaneous barbecue. Suddenly there were 10 of us, my friend's children and the acquaintance they hadn't seen in ages. The daughter I had seen in my vision was flirting with this guest in an unusually challenging way, and it was clear that there was a different atmosphere in the air than usual. I had never seen the girl like that before, and never again after that. I had the feeling that the issue I had seen in my mind's eye was being discharged in a good way and that no one was harmed as a result. When the next day dawned, I felt liberated and a huge burden was lifted from me. Today, fortunately, I am wiser and know how to deal with visions, although fortunately I don't have them all that often. You can influence or change situations that you see in such a vision if you behave accordingly. I don't get any information in advance about things that are set in stone and are supposed to happen. I think that it makes sense that way, because I now know that visions don't come to torment me. Today I know why I hesitated to tell my friend about the images I had seen. I had already sensed that our friendship would break up because of them. Unfortunately, I can't say whether there were other reasons why our friendship slowly but surely ended, because despite various attempts, there was no longer a really open and clarifying conversation between us. I regret that very much, but I can now accept it, because I am still grateful for everything that I was able to learn and experience during this time together. Another, far-reaching change took place in my perception. Until now, I was used to getting clear images of deceased people when I was in contact with them. Or I perceived the actual emotional states of the people I met. But suddenly I saw demonic beings in my mind's eye when I was in close contact with a person. It didn't frighten me, it just irritated me. simply because I couldn't classify and understand these images. At some point I asked my spiritual helper, with whom I now had very good access and intensive contact, what these images meant. He explained to me that they were symbols for people's egos, which I perceived in this way. Now curious, I asked myself what my own ego symbol looked like, and I immediately had it in my mind's eye. I began to work with this image and thereby recognized parts and potentials of my personality that I had not previously been aware of. Negative habits or characteristics that quickly lost their horror when I no longer repressed them, but instead asked myself what their positive sides could be. Because every coin has two sides. In this way a method was created with which I can now help people in a simple way to recognize, accept and learn to love themselves. This method has become one of the most important foundations of my work, something I could never have imagined at the time. My husband developed spiritually just like me, but in a different direction. He was fascinated by Celtic rituals, nature spirits, read tarot cards and, like me, occasionally perceived the deceased. I admired his ability to perceive the spiritual world and communicate with it. I hadn't realized until a specific experience that I could do it at least as well as he could. One day we had a visit from a lady and her adult daughter who were looking to contact their deceased son and brother. She had somehow found out about my husband's gift and so she came to our house for his first official session. We had no idea that it would also be his last. I asked my husband if he would mind if I were there, because I was really extremely curious to see how he would do it. So I sat expectantly in the corner after we had assured each other that it was okay for the two women that I would be there. My husband began to talk, but I quickly sensed how excited he was and that it wasn't working the way he wanted it to. He tried to get started with his tarot cards, but he just couldn't seem to get it right. Instead, during his efforts, I heard a male voice I didn't recognize, telling me lots of details. I was a little confused and decided not to go into it any further. When my husband stopped trying after a while and decided to end the session, I asked him carefully whether it was possible that he couldn't hear anything because the young man was talking to me the whole time. And so I passed on the information that the deceased son and brother of the two women had given me. The statements were so specific and accurate that it was easy to rule out any mistakes. Contrary to expectations, contact did take place after all, and the two women found certainty and comfort and now knew how the deceased was doing. My husband was totally unsettled after this experience, although we were both initially happy that the two women had been helped. Ultimately, it didn't matter which of us had done it. He decided not to make any more such attempts and said that I would be much better suited to the task. I saw things differently at the time, although I was still amazed at the ease with which I had made contact with the deceased. The relationship between my husband and me became increasingly problematic. It was really strange, although we loved each other very much, our life together became more and more difficult. His mother interfered in our marriage, I felt very lonely, and we withdrew from each other. Strangely, I had the feeling from the beginning that we would not have children together, even though we had married and had always wanted children in our lives. I suppressed this inner voice because it did not match my external image. I had the impression that my husband was no longer happy in our relationship either, but he did not express it directly. He simply spent a lot of time in front of the television and came home later and later. A very bizarre situation made me realize that our marriage was beyond saving. At some point I noticed that he was no longer wearing his wedding ring. I asked him why he no longer had it on his finger and he answered me rather uncertainly that it must be in some pocket and he just hadn't found it yet. But a few days later. On what had actually happened to his ring? He and his colleague from the funeral home had picked up an old lady who had died at home. After he had decorated the coffin, the old woman was lifted into the coffin. Then he took off his rubber gloves in the coffin, as undertakers usually do after someone has been placed in the coffin. The ring slipped off his finger as it was, symbolically, too big for him. Unfortunately, he noticed it too late. namely, only when the old lady had been buried with her wedding ring. When he then confessed this to me, my first comment was, "That's a great omen for our marriage." But somehow I wasn't really surprised.